the way I thought I would structure the thing is basically read a bit from my new book, which I hope then establishes my credentials as an authentic UFO witness and possible abductee. And then I'll talk a little bit about what I think about it, because I don't think about it what most people think about it. My dream from the time I was 8 or 9 was to encounter a UFO, because I always had the impression that if you would encounter one, you could understand it. That it was maddening to realize that it seemed to have a great affinity for people who live in trailer courts, but very little affinity for anybody I knew. And so you constantly had to filter these eyewitness reports by people that you wouldn't send to the corner store to buy milk. So this was a problem, and it will haunt, I'm sure it haunts many of you who have never encountered a UFO. So I'll read the description of the encounter, then talk a little bit about my conclusions and ideas about it, and then we can just have a discussion. I guess I should say a little bit about my method. I really am a fence sitter. I loathe science and am always keen to attack it in most situations, though not here, because I love reason, and I'm perfectly aware of the difference. I also know what a concept means, like rules of evidence. It's been, 47 years since the Rainier lights, or close to it, and the phenomenon has not become more explicit. The hysteria has become more explicit and has wandered first in one direction and then another. But if this is a contact, it's the most peculiarly uncontact-like contact it's possible to imagine. It reminds me of people say of the crop circles, you know, they're communicating. Yes, but if they are, they picked an incredibly obscure medium in which to do it, because we who love communication can glean very little from what they're trying to say. I have to introduce the context, because it wasn't like that we just happened to be driving in a lonely and remote place and suddenly, no, it wasn't like that. We were in the center of the Amazon basin. We had come there to explore tryptamine hallucinogens. These are short-acting, very powerful psychedelic drugs. And the reason we were so interested in these drugs is because in encounters with it in the pure chemical form, the intoxication was invariably characterized by encounters with elves, gnomes, fairies, thousands of these things. And this was, and this is something I'm going to, try and convince the UFO community of. What we drug people have that you don't is repeatability. And the scientists always said to you UFO people, what you don't have is repeatability. They don't want to even talk to us. But it is true that when you smoke DMT, for example, at a sufficiently high and prepared dose, you get elves. Everybody does. You may not believe it, but on the other hand, it only takes 5 minutes to prove that I'm bullshitting you 100%. Surely anyone who's studied UFOs and alien intelligence for as many years as the people represented here have can afford to invest 10 minutes in the wild-eyed assertion that all you need do is inhale deeply three times, and you know, you want contact, you want elves, you want alien intelligence, you'll have it up the kazoo. My entry into psychedelics began very naively. It was presented as instant psychotherapy or insight, however vaguely defined. What I discovered when you make your way through these chemical families is that not all psychedelics are alike. And this very small family of compounds called the tryptamine hallucinogens bear careful examination if we're seriously interested in this question of extraterrestrial penetration of the human world. On two grounds, immediately, the mushroom bears looking at. First argument, entirely a physical argument. Psilocybin is 4-phosphoryloxy-NN-dimethyltryptamine. What this means is that there is a phosphorus group substituted at the 4 position of the molecule. Now, here's the headline, folks. This is the only 4-phosphorylated indole on this planet. On this planet. Now, if you were searching for extraterrestrial thumbprints on the biology of Earth, you would look for molecules that are unique, that don't have near relative spread through other life forms. In psilocybin, we have a perfect example of this. It is the only 4-phosphorylated indole known to occur in nature. Nature doesn't work like that, folks. Nature builds always on what has previously been accomplished. So this is a red flag saying at the molecular level, this thing looks like an alien artifact at the molecular level. Now, let's cut to the chase. What happens when you take 30 milligrams of this stuff? I don't know how sophisticated this audience is. People who have never taken hallucinogenic drugs but have some mild interest in it, or just in the course of generally educating yourself about reality, I think people who have never taken psychedelics think that it's sort of like dreaming while you're awake, or geometric patterns, colors. They always say, the colors, malarkey, the colors, forget the colors. It is not like that. Psychedelic experiences at effective doses, not piddling doses, effective doses, are visionary scenarios. They are three-dimensional unfoldments of information that is extraordinarily complex, architectonically connected, and ordered. That's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about what is unique to psilocybin. What is unique to psilocybin is that overlaid over what I just described is, big surprise, a voice. A voice. Everybody knows this who has to do with this stuff. Gordon Wasson, Richard Schultes, Albert Hoffman, the giants know that this stuff is animate. This is not a drug. It's something which is disguising itself as a drug in order not to spread alarm. There is a voice which speaks to you in the language of your homeland, whether that be Mazatecan or English. And the voice surprises you. In other words, you cannot anticipate it. Now, of course, at this point, though I don't imagine many of them have forced their way in here, the psychological school will come forward and say, well, it's a voice typical of mental aberration, symptom 1 of schizophrenia, a voice. Yes, yes, we are not naive. We went to the same schools you did, thank you. If we are, in fact, being penetrated by a non-human intelligence that presumably somehow, perhaps not physically, but perhaps physically, can cross from star to star, then we are dealing with something vastly more sophisticated than ourselves. That's just given at the get-go. Well, if it's vastly more advanced than we are, then DNA sequencing, complete understanding of the molecular genesis of thought, so forth and so on, would be no problem for that level of technical sophistication. You would also like to think that ethics and good taste would keep pace with this evolutionary process. So to my mind, the idea of fleets of alien spacecraft filling the skies of Earth, that's as unsubtle as kicking down somebody's front door with an M1 tank to announce, "We're here." I don't think you would do it that way. If you really wanted to study a aboriginal race and you really had a hot technology, what you would do is you would study their social psychology and you would say, are there any chinks in the armor of their expectations about how reality behaves? And you would discover, in studying us, this species intoxicates itself. And it has a curious attitude towards its intoxications. Anything goes. So if somebody drinks a pint of Stolichnaya and announces that they see pink elephants, we are all amused. We say, of course you do. You were drunk out of your mind. Isn't it obvious that an alien would hide its presence in an intoxication? That this is the non-invasive, tasteful, respectful way to have intercourse with another species. You say, you put yourself into a plant. You put a barcode into a molecule. Then the shaman intoxicates himself and he says, aha, it's an ancestor spirit, or it's the soul of the plant. But whatever it is, it's giving me good information. It's telling me where the reindeer went. It's telling me what the weather will be next week. It's telling me who stole the goose, and it's telling me who slept with who, and it's telling me who among the ill members of my tribe will live and who will die. And with that information, I can make a political career as a healer. Plato said, time is the moving image of eternity. The way I think of shamanism and psychedelic voyaging is that it is transdimensional travel, literally, not in the undefined way that you often hear it used, but in the mathematical sense. A shaman and a psychedelic person and a UFO contactee is someone who has seen the end. They simply didn't know what they were looking at, because who knows what the end looks like. The world of historical possibility concresses into a mercurial hologrammatic disk, part bios, part machine, part syntax, part mind. The categories dissolve. The world is not what it appears to be. I was very interested in I was very interested in coming to this thing and studying the psychology of the group, and it was very fascinating to me that both of the speakers, where I listened to the whole thing, were very concerned to refute the psychological explanation, which I gather is the Antichrist around here. And as I understand it, somebody said to me, the first thing they said to me, I thought, my God, these people are on edge. He said, I want you to know that this Jungian thing is bullshit. I said, okay, that's fine. However, this is like beating a dead horse. Has the news from quantum physics not reached the UFO community? Is it not now thoroughly assimilated that an observer is necessary for reality to exist at all? It's all psychological. There's no distinction. And so these people who have such enthusiasm for beryllium ships from Arcturus or wherever should be informed, you know. Same, same. That's important news. It is now, and where is it coming from? Let's not rush past this here. Physics has always been the paradigmatic science. All sciences have physics envy. Why is that? Because it's not unlikely in a physics experiment to be able to predict an experimental result to 3 decimal points of accuracy. That's science. You don't get that in sociology. You don't get that in psychology. You don't even get that in biology. And physics is the most mathematical of all the sciences. So around the towering edifice of physics, the more frightened and uncertain of the sciences had gathered near her skirts. Well, so now what is physics telling us? Saying, folks, hold your horses here. It turns out the cheerful world of billiard ball-like atoms winging their way through Newtonian space is in for serious revision. It turns out that these particles aren't even particles. They're waves. Well, no, not exactly. They're both. Well, what I actually meant to say was, and you discover the babble of mad people is what is coming out of the physics departments today. Science has collapsed. Its core has given way to contradiction. Number one, it's incomprehensible. Number two, it's self-contradictory. Number three, you can't conceptualize it except in some enormously complicated mathematical phase space anyway. So this concern for the materiality of the saucers is a completely anachronistic issue. Carried far enough, the analysis of this stage will show you that it has no, quote, reality to it. Now, this plays nicely right into my hands. Let's go back now to those drug-induced hallucinations. You know, I think every UFO investigator in the country, they have these forms when they come rushing out to your house when you report an 11-mile-long green cigar overhead. And the first question is, are you intoxicated? Do you have a history of taking drugs? What is your relationship to altered states? Most encounters with extraterrestrials take place in altered states. That's what altered states are. Reality is, you know, the tip of an iceberg of irrationality that we've managed to drag ourselves up onto for a few panting moments before we slip back into the sea of the unreal.
One possible view of the flying saucer is that it is a kind of projection from the consciousness of the planet, that it is Gaia, that it is in fact a kind of alchemical object haunting human historical time with a symbol of totality, the kind of totality that our religions and our mystical yearnings are so at pains to concretize for us. Mm-hmm. But unless we, as egocentric beings, clarify our relationship to the unconscious, then I think the flying saucer is going to remain quintessentially mysterious. And this was Jung's view.
Even if UFOs had a physical reality could be photographed or could be weighed and measured, that they still might in some manner be projections of the human mind.
Oh yes, this is an important point to make, which the flying saucer people are forever misunderstanding, and that is, saying that the flying saucer is a psychic object does not mean that it is not a physical object. Jung in Mysterium Conjunctionis is at great pains to say that the realm of the psychic and the realm of the physical meet in a strange kind of never-never land that we have yet to create the intellectual tools to explore. This is where the mystery of synchronicity is going to come to rest, the mystery of all kinds of paranormal activity on the part of human beings, and the mystery of the flying saucer. It's interesting, you see, that if you take the broad world of the so-called mysteries, parapsychological, shamanic, extraterrestrial, so forth, and hypothesize another spatial dimension, one more spatial dimension, then suddenly all these mysteries become trivial. Mm-hmm. They are easily done. Locked boxes are opened, future events are discerned, lost objects are found. This sort of thing becomes quite the ordinary run of things if we hypothesize dimensions hidden from ordinary experience.
And, of course, there's serious work at this point in the field of unified field theory in physics to postulate other dimensions of space than we normally think of.
If we then turn our attention to mind and realize that having no definition of what mind is, why then is there any mystery in the fact that we have no definition of what the UFO is? The mind is present at hand in every conscious moment. It has been our constant companion for 50,000 years, and we haven't a clue as to what it is. So, therefore, a manifestation of the other, the superego, or the extraterrestrial other, like the UFO, it is not surprising that it is a mystery. I always hark back to the words of J.B.S. Haldane, the great British entomologist, who said, reality is not only stranger than we suppose, it may be stranger than we can suppose. In that sense, Jung was really on to something when he saw it as coming from the unconscious. It is like an object coming from the unconscious with a compensatory function to turn us away from the rational and toward the intuitive, to turn us away from the paternalistic, Apollonian, solar, masculine view of things and toward a kind of watery, lunar, mysterious, intuitively felt feminine force, almost as though the UFO is a manifestation of Gaia as mother goddess. Science as the proudest, pardon the word, erection of the rational mind then is challenged by something from an entirely other dimension, an entirely other realm that concretizes for us the culture crisis. And that's why I've gotten into UFOs. I think they are important for a resolution of the culture crisis. They concretize the struggle between the paternalistic masculine and the lunar feminine to between a dominator society and the kind of partnership society that we require to survive.
And yet it seems as if that challenge is not a direct confrontation. It's, as Vallée points out, the UFOs are operating almost at the mythological level of our culture. They're not landing in the White House. They're not really challenging the military or NASA.
No, they're very mercurial, very watery. When you reach out toward them, there is nothing there. What they chiefly have become is an intellectual force in human thinking about the future. But when you reach out to grasp the hardware, to read the message, to meet the alien, there is nothing there.
It's amazing to me the number of people who will want to tell me of a miracle. And their evidence for it is that they heard that. They heard that a chunk of flying saucer has been recovered in Uruguay. They heard that there was a machine found impossible to construct by known human means. I say, well, where did you hear it? They say, well, on Art Bell or something like that. This is not evidence of anything except the foolishness of human beings. Now, if you have such a machine, we'll talk. You know, that's how close in it has to be, because we live in a world mad for weird news, and there's money to be made. I mean, think of these people like Bud Hopkins and Whitley Strieber and Kenneth Starr, for that matter. It is in none of these people's interest to come back to the rest of us and say, you know, I investigated that flying saucer or that blowjob, and it appears not to have happened. It appears to be a bunch of malarkey. This sells no books. This builds no reputation. This advances no agenda. No, they say, well, you know, it looks like this is the real thing, and it's going to make some real changes here. You have to have your crap detector in order. And if you are content with rumor, then there are enough rumors around that you need never leave your armchair. You can just enjoy the weirdness of the world, and you don't have to take drugs, and you don't have to go to Bali, and you don't have to get your feet muddy in the rainforest. But none of this can be trusted or is worthwhile. Information mutates. It's perverse. People have strange unconscious agendas. So I will entertain anything given that there is evidence that will stand the test. But rumor doesn't do it. And the other thing is, most people are incredibly decent, and most people are incredibly naive about how weaselly some people can be. So, you know, here's someone on the telly in blackened profile, their voice altered by electronic means, and they're saying, well, I was a NASA scientist, and I was there when the alien body parts were brought into the freezer. I was under Colonel so-and-so. Well, don't you ask yourself, why the blackened screen? Why the electronically altered voice? They say, well, certain agencies of the U.S. government would hunt me down if I were to tell this story. No, people, come on. The government, if we can handle the president's blowjob, we can handle the knowledge that there are extraterrestrials interfering with American politics. This idea that we can't handle it, hell, there's nothing else where they spare our feelings. They're perfectly willing to hit you with the latest tax hike or a preposterous piece of immigration legislation or racist malarkey or homophobic crapola. But somehow in this area of alien contact, we're thought to be so fragile we just can't handle the news. I don't bite. If somebody has real evidence, we'll take a look. But no blackened screens, no anonymity, no not for attribution, back channel briefings, please. That's all the sign of a con job in progress. And then the other thing is, do never be impressed by credentials. Of course, maybe I say this because I have practically none. But, you know, any weird story which begins like this: former NASA scientist Harold Schmigley said in Santa Fe today. When I hear the phrase former NASA scientist, I reach for my revolver. If somebody leads with their credentials, they're conning you. If somebody says human being David Schmigley reports so-and-so, then I say, well, that's interesting. What does David have to say? But if they immediately try to snow you, like NASA scientists are supposed to know something about this or have a better grip on reality than the rest of us, get real. You can't be serious. You know, any stage magician will tell you scientists are the grist for the mill, the easiest folks to lead around by the nose there are. That's why, well, no, I don't want to name names or get into bashing of particular careers. I've skirted close enough to that already. My point being, the truth can defend itself. And if you really want to believe in the Hall of Records beneath the Sphinx or the crop circles or the Area 51 that our government is trading fetal tissue for high technology, well, then hustle your buns down there and drink in the bars and buy people drinks and hear what's really going on. Because at the distances we all are from these phenomena, our instruments that inform us are incredibly perverse and designed to mislead, befuddle, and bamboozle us. And that's one of the things I love about the psychedelic experience is I sound like one of these mad people. You know, the things I say about DMT, are these dead souls? Is this extraterrestrial intervention? But I have a method. You can check me. Just go smoke DMT. Now, granted, it's not as easy as ordering a double latte, but on the other hand, it's certainly a lot easier than confirming the existence of alien body parts in some government vault. If you think I'm full of crap, smoke DMT and then come tell me about how it didn't do anything or it was, I overrated it tremendously. In other words, we have an object that we can investigate. And weird as DMT is, we can investigate it by normal investigative methods, by giving it to people, by interviewing them, by building virtual realities and seeing if they confirm, yeah, that's what it looked like to me. In other words, strangeness is not in principle beyond investigation, but the method by which it should be investigated is no different than the methods we bring to bear on any other thing which puzzles us.